Welcome to this edition of Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your guest host for this episode, Dr. Doug Ray from Baltimore, Maryland, and today I'm joined by Rod Schlosser. Rod's a professor of otolaryngology and director of the Nose and Sinus Center at the Medical University of South Carolina. We'll be discussing his recent publication, Surgical Management of Headache and Facial Pain Pressure in Chronic Rhinosinusitis, a systematic review and meta-analysis that was first published in the recent issue of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. Welcome to the podcast, Rod. How are things in beautiful Charleston?
Great, Doug. Starting to get a little warm and humid, but that's what happens down in the South. But at least we have the ocean to run to.
Now, I heard from you earlier in the week that you're going on a nice trip to Greece this week.
Yeah, we're taking a family vacation. It got put on hold for a few years because of COVID, but my two older boys and my daughter-in-law are going to go with my wife. So the five of us are going to have a great trip.
So is this the first sort of big family trip in a long time?
Well, we've had a few others, but this is one we've been planning for quite some time. So we're looking forward to the family time. And we've not been to Greece before, so it's going to be a cruise where we kind of island hop. And so I'm looking forward to it.
That's great. It's great to spend some time with your family. So headache and facial pain represent one of the cardinal symptoms of chronic sinusitis, and about 80% of CRS patients manifest some type of headache or facial pain. We know that. But the impact of sinus surgery on facial pain and headache historically has been very variable and controversial, often discussed at many of our meetings. And so your review and meta-analysis sort of seek to better examine improvements in headache and facial pain after sinus surgery. So Rod, we know the impact of sinus surgery on CRS patients' facial pain and headache has always been debated, talked about. We know that there are patients with severe disease who don't endorse having any facial pain, while there's others who have very mild disease who suffer from debilitating facial pain or headaches. So the incidence and severity of facial pain and headache as it pertains to CRS has always been pretty variable, and as has the impact of sinus surgery on these symptoms. So my first question for you is, how did you become interested in this topic?
We're both fairly mature in our careers, and I think the longer I go, the more some of these, I would consider it a relatively simple question, kind of mind-boggling in a way, because as you said, a lot of our patients have severe disease, and by that, I think you mean massive polyps, bad CT scan, all of our staging systems and grading systems, they would be considered severe, but they have very little pain or pressure, whereas the mild patient has a lot. And so that was always a bit of an enigma to me. And then the other thing is that, sometimes I would counsel patients, and I still do, and I say, well, your headache might be due to your sinus disease. It could be independent, and it might just be an exacerbating factor. So it was always very challenging for me to counsel patients when that can, it's one of the cardinal symptoms. As you mentioned, a lot of patients have it. And then I was trying to say, well, it might get better, it might not. And I really didn't have anything to, any numbers or any data to provide them. So that's kind of what prompted this study, is so that I could better counsel my patients when that's one of their primary complaints.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing in my practice. There are certain symptoms of the cardinal symptoms that you feel confident in telling a patient are going to get better. And then there are certain symptoms you sort of say, just as you had outlined, well, it might get better or it might not. It depends on how much of this headache or how much of this facial pressure pain actually relates to your sinus disease and how much is related to something else. And so it's always tricky, but I think we're going to get into it a little bit more. But I think the question is great because we have to counsel these patients. And at least you know that you can tell a patient based on the data that there's likely to be some improvement. So let's kind of get into the methodology. Can you talk a little bit about the methodology of your paper?
Yeah, so it was a systematic review with a meta-analysis and, the highest level of evidence. We ended up getting about 26 studies and over 2,800 patients. We looked at, a lot of patients, I think, probably overlap when they're describing headache with facial pain and pressure, and they point to their forehead area. And is that a headache or is that sinus pain or pressure? Certainly, like the maxillary and cheek area is a little more less commonly described as a headache and more of a facial pain and pressure. So we used any study that had SNOT 22 scores that we could tease out the facial pain and pressure question, or if they used VAS questionnaires so that we could kind of lump those together in order to try to get some gauge of the improvement or at least of the change with the surgical intervention.
So Rod, I know there were three groups that you sort of segmented your patient population into, but there were differences across those groups. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, you know, you start off looking at the entire population, but then when we were able to, you know, and I think we all have experienced this, and the data supports that CRS without tends to have more pain and pressure and headache as a complaint. We've even looked at some of it similar to like cystic fibrosis. A lot of those patients have facial pain and pressure and headache as a major symptom. And so we wanted to at least try to look at those two phenotypes. And then some of the studies, though, we were unable to separate those. So some of them were the overall population, then a mixed or a heterogeneous group of CRS. And then when we were able to, we teased out the with and without polyp phenotype specifically so that we could try to, you know, maybe get a little bit better with personalized medicine or kind of precision medicine when you're trying to counsel that patient in the clinic.
So you talked a little bit about it. I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit about the limitations of the study, which is that there were certain things that you guys couldn't account for in the paper. And that was, just to outline it, it was whether they had primary or vision surgery or with how far out they were, what their follow-up was. So those are sort of things that limited you in terms of being able to segment those patients out. And also sort of what kind of endotype they kind of would fall in.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Doug. And I think, you know, it's just like we're learning about endotypes and the biologics have kind of really prompted our understanding in the field of CRS with polyps and a better understanding of specific endotypes that may present to us clinically looking very similar. And I suspect that at some point down the road, CRS without, we will find an endotype that potentially is more related to headache or pain and pressure. You know, maybe there's a certain cytokine or a protein or a neurotransmitter, you know, substance P and some of these other kind of neurotransmitters that mediate pain in the face. You know, maybe those are upregulated in certain CRS without endotypes. And maybe those mediators are things that we can improve with surgery or medication down the road to better fine tune improvements in facial pain and pressure and headache.
Right. And I think that has implications on other studies that could be done in this area, right? Another limitation you mentioned in your paper is you weren't able to segment out those patients who have concurrent migraine and those that don't, right? Because we're always struggling with patients in terms of their facial pain. Is it migraine or is it not? One of the things I've always told my patients, and I think you'd mentioned this, is if they're a migraine patient, I'll tell them that their CRS is likely a trigger. And then if I treat that either through surgery or medical therapy, I'm eliminating one trigger, but on a bad weather day, they're still going to get headaches. I'm not curing them of their headaches. So I can sort of envision another study down the road at looking at these, it's segmenting out types of patients that don't have migraine versus those that do and sort of how they do long term.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly the way I approach my patients as well. I'm glad to see that there's some interest in this topic because I know that there's now the Migraine Society of Otolaryngology, which is, I think, trying to take a scientific look at how we treat these patients because all of these patients, Doug, had CRS. So they all had disease on endoscopy or CT. So objective evidence of disease. But your clinics probably are, if they're like mine, I see a fair number that have perfectly clear endoscopy and perfectly clear CAT scan, but they still have nasal symptoms. They think they have sinusitis. So those patients are not included in this study, but they certainly are relevant to us as rhinologists and how we can better take care of those patients. So I do think there's going to be a lot of interest in the future. You know, we've done some work looking at trigeminal nerve things, and there's newer devices for like looking at the posterior nasal nerve. And so people are doing nerve blocks, you know, like the neurologists do some things. So I think that this is going to be an evolving field. It's one that affects a lot of patients. So I really think that there's definitely a need and a gap in our treatment algorithms currently.
So Rod, how is this study, if any, does it change the way that you approach these patients and counsel them?
You know, if you look at the results in the delta, and, you know, one thing that I think has been mentioned is that the CRS without patients had better improvement with surgery. Well, that was a better absolute improvement, but that's probably because CRS without generally starts off with worse scores at baseline or preoperatively. So if you take a CRS with polyp patient who doesn't have a lot of headache or facial pain and pressure, that they're not going to have much of a delta because it's not as common in that phenotype and it's not as severe. So most of the studies show that there's much more prevalent in CRS without, and it's also much more severe. So those patients are more likely to have some improvement. But regardless, both groups had improvements. And depending upon which question you looked at, was it the SNOT-22 question? Was it a VAS question? They generally improved. You know, you can kind of tell patients between 40 and 60% of the average severity of their symptoms. So that doesn't mean that 40 to 60% of patients get improvement, because we were unable to dive down. And, you know, I would love to have said, what's our responder rate? You know, X percent of patients with severe pain improved.
Right. Right.
But we were unable to do that and tease that out from the data. But we could say that as a whole, CRS patients, generally, the severity of their symptoms will improve by roughly 50%, you know, depending upon their phenotype, you know, with a little bit of variability. But I think that that's at least something you can counsel patients and say, on average, your symptom severity will improve by about half. That means it's not going to be, I think it's important, as you say, it's not going to be a cure. They're not going to be a home run, no symptoms, no headache, no pain and pressure, but it should get, you know, a fair bit better.
And I agree with you that was actually the reason why I wanted to interview with you about this paper, because I think facial pain and headache is to a rhinologist what dizziness and vertigo is to the otologist, right? You're going to see a ton of these patients in your office, and some of them have normal CT scans, and that's pretty easy to deal with, right? You just tell them that there's not a lot you're going to do for their headache. You can try treating allergy or other things because that's a trigger, but that's an easier patient than the ones that come with disease. My experience in having that conversation with patients and counseling them is it's a quality of life, right? That's what we're dealing with. We're trying to improve quality of life. But happy patients, I think, are generally the ones whose expectations you're managing. You want to set the bar as low as possible so you can jump over it. If you set the bar low and the patient goes through surgery and they're 60% better and their headaches are 70% better, then you're a hero. Rog Schlosser is the greatest rhinologist in the world. But if they're only getting 20% improvement, they think you're a horrible sinus surgeon. So I think these numbers mean something, because you have evidence and you can give them a realistic improvement, and you're not giving them false hope, and you're not telling them, you know, there's 100% chance that you're going to get better.
Yeah, no, I would agree completely. And I think, Doug, it'd be awesome if we continue to gather data on this so that we can try to better predict which patients are going to get improvement or not, you know, because some patients just, you know, and I think quite honestly, otolaryngologists probably gloss over this. We don't want to treat migraine and trigeminal neuralgia and things like that. It's not typically a surgical disease, but it definitely is one that I think we can help patients with, you know, and at least in my practice, a lot of times we end up referring them to neurology, and I guess I would just say the results are not stellar in many cases, because they get put on medications that make them drowsy. And so it can be months to get in. And so I do think that if we could come up with some better treatments or at least prognostic indicators, it would be of great benefit to these patients.
I agree 100%. And you've already alluded to this, but I wanted to cover it one more time because I think it's so important. And us as experienced rhinologists, we might have ideas or see things coming down the pipeline that people are listening to this podcast. Everybody's sort of desperate for future treatments. And you had mentioned posterior nerve ablation or posterior nerve neurolysis, but I think one of the things that's opened my eyes about all the devices that are out there, Clarifex, Neuromark, Rhinair, is that we're starting to learn that there's a more of a neurogenic component of the disease. And so what role does posterior nerve neurolysis have in these patients? And I put chronic sinusitis patients in this group. Like, does ablating certain parts of their nasal anatomy when you're doing the sinus surgery, could that potentially help them and add benefit in terms of their treatment?
I think that's a great question, and one that we honestly don't know. You know, I mean, if you think about a lot of the facial pain and pressure is mediated by the trigeminal nerve. We know that neurology now, they do nerve blocks and, you know, some other Botox and other things near the sphenopalatine ganglion. And as rhinologists, we have easy access to that region. And so I think that there is potential for us to do some things procedure-wise and or local administration of medications where we could potentially impact this disease in a manner with fewer side effects than the systemic treatments that they're getting now. You know, we have an otologist that does vestibular migraine in our department, and he does a lot of Botox injections and other things. So I do think that there is definitely a potential role in something that we should investigate in the future, whether that be procedures to ablate nerves or to pharmacologically block them or inject them. So, you know, as rhinologists, we have access to this area in the office. And so I think we could offer a lot of treatments that avoid a lot of those other systemic side effects that the neurologists typically rely upon.
I mean, I agree 100%, right? If you're a rhinologist like us, I mean, probably you're in academic medicine, so it's 100% of your patients, but in a typical day, 80% of my patients are sinus patients, either new or follow up. And there's no way you're going to look at your schedule and not see headache or facial pain listed as one of the chief complaints of your patients. So this is something that we all deal with. And frankly, I think it's one of the hardest areas in terms of the quality of life and what we're shooting for with these patients to fix. So any new things that we can come up with sort of to help them. And I agree that sending them to a neurologist, there's been very few times where they've come back and I've sort of fixed their problem with a neurologist because, like you said, they're either putting on neurosuppressive medication, so they're drowsy a lot, or it takes them a long time to get in, or the neurologist says, well, you don't have a brain tumor, so, you know, you're good. It's hard to find, you know, a good treatment for these patients.
And Doug, I'd throw out one other shout out. You know, I was looking at the program for the Summer Sinus Symposium, and there's a panel on kind of some newer treatment strategies, I guess I would say, looking at acoustic energy and positive pressure. And I know that there are nerve stimulator devices that are out there for facial pain and pressure. We're looking at some nerve stimulators for anosmia through an NIH grant. So I think, you know, in addition to some of the stuff in the nose, there's other treatment modalities that are being investigated that hopefully over the next few years we do see some promising results. But it's a really kind of a neat area that's probably been ignored for decades, quite honestly.
I agree. Rod, this was a great conversation. I really appreciate you joining me, you know, right before your vacation. I think your paper, as we had talked about, is going to be tremendously helpful in helping us to counsel patients and sort of opens the door, is going to contribute to new literature in this area. So I do want to congratulate you and your fellow authors on the publication. And thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Doug. Take care.
Thank you to our Scope It Out listeners. This is Doug Ray for Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology, signing off for now. See you soon.